Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 104 of season 10 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again for a penultimate episode. And not only is this the penultimate episode, it is also my 1200th episode of this podcast. So I'd like to welcome back my good friend, Agent Palmer from the Palmer Files. Welcome back.
It's good to be back. I don't even know where to begin, because this was like one of those things that, if I'm being honest, outside of trailers for the remake, I had never like watched anything.
Okay, that's not a good thing that you're thinking of the trailers for the remake. So
well, but I mean, I wouldn't have been. I wasn't around. I'm a baby, Rob. I wasn't around for the trailers for the original.
No, not at all. I'm saying I'm glad that you didn't watch the remake. That was my point.
I mean, I will say I liked this enough that I'm curious about the remake.
Okay, I mean, again, you can go watch it. But, I'm not going to stop you from watching it. I will eventually rewatch it also. I'm not a fan of it.
Okay.
You know, I didn't like a lot of things they did. Let me rephrase that. As I've said many times over the course of this entire season, and anyone who knows me knows this, I'm not a fan of remakes. Because most of the time, if the original movie is a great movie, like I think this movie is, why do you need to remake it?
Yeah, and there was... There was a point, and I don't remember exactly where it was, where I was thinking, how much would a cell phone change this movie?
What do you mean? There would be no movie if they had a cell phone. That would be it. This plot would not work with a cell phone. That's what it comes down to. Or GPS and things like that. Yeah,
that's true. Although they did have eyes on the car for most of it anyway.
Okay, but still, it's not the same.
No.
Now they'd have drones following the train down the path. You know.
Yeah.
Blue would have to knock out those drones before they started moving. You know, they make things. Technology would make things a little more complicated. And I gotta say, and again, I've talked about this for 104 episodes so far, 103 episodes before today, but there's nothing I would change in this movie. I like the way that it all is done, and it works for a movie that was made in 74.
Yeah. So this was the first time I'd seen it, and I knew it was a hijacking film, but I didn't know anything else. And there's a part of me, because we're kept so in the dark as the viewer for so long, that I really like this movie, because it felt very like Ocean's 11 to me, where like,
oh God,
not only in that if you don't figure it out, they will explain it to you, but you don't know about it going in. You don't like, there's no like as an example, I love The Italian Job, the original, but
Michael Caine.
But they sit down in like a chateau and go over the whole plan. You're not surprised. You don't get to guess at how things may happen. You're told, and things may go wrong and things may change, but it's like, this is the plan. And this movie is more Oceans in that regard, where like they explain it to you at the end if you haven't figured it out. And I like that. I think that's a style of movie making, of storytelling, we don't do all that often anymore.
No. Because now you have the clip at the beginning and the clip in the middle and the flashbacks, and you know they change things so much, the way they make movies now. And I think that's one of the reasons why this works so well. Even watching it now after 51 years, you look back and you're like, okay, because they don't make movies this way anymore.
No. And it's for an old movie, it's very refreshing, I guess.
Yes.
Like that's kind of the way I felt about it. Like, oh, this is they're treating me like I have some intelligence. They're not being dumb. Like I get to either figure it out on my own or just keep watching. And that's one.
And did you figure things out as it was moving along?
I had a sinking suspicion, but I wasn't entirely sure.
Okay.
You know, and I'll admit that, like, you know, when they brought up the dummy switch, or the dead man switch, I was like, well, they have to find a way around that. And then maybe otherwise it's just going to be in my head, like before they brought that up. And I don't know. I've been on a subway, but I don't know the intricacies of it. So like in my head, I'm like, so are we getting like a subway chase? Like that would just be weird. You know, and as somebody who's never seen it before, like that's not on a weird thought. That's like one of the possibilities, right? And so it was fun, and it was fun just thinking like, all right, well, I'm along for the ride now. Let's see how this goes. I have to say, like, shout out to Fat Kaz, who in the most polite way has the best line in the entire movie. How the hell can you run a goddamn railroad without swearing? And it's just like, I heard that and went, oh, just such a great line.
Yes, that they would never have in a movie today. They're so, let's put it this way, anything Kaz said, they would completely delete anything that he says here nowadays. You know?
Yeah, but so good, so good. Yes. And I like. There are things that, like, as you watch this, you see other films that have, like, it been influenced by this. But it truly does, like, I liked it. It stands on its own. I thought, like, this was one I was like, oh, this is really good. That's kind of why I'm curious about the remakes. Because I know people, I know how you feel about remakes. And I know how other people feel about remakes. And, I guess bringing the Italian Job up as an example, I actually like the remake, although I treat it as a separate movie. Okay. It's basically like a something different because it's not exactly the same. It's not even remotely close. It's kind of just like an heir to the Italian Job as opposed to like a true remake or a true sequel.
Right.
And so if it's done in that kind of a space, maybe, but otherwise, I don't know. We'll see. Who knows?
Okay. All right. That's fair. So did you convince Steph to watch this one with you or not?
No. I she watched the little one so I could watch this without taking breaks. Mm. I think this would have taken a little bit longer to watch.
Yes.
Yeah. But that, you know, it moves too. I mean, that's the other thing, not, you know, pun intended, I guess, because it takes place on a subway, but this does not feel like a long movie. Like, it's more than 90 minutes, but it doesn't feel much more than
90 minutes though.
It's not
15 minutes that I know for you, a movie's gotta be 90 minutes. And that's why when I saddle you with a movie that's 169 minutes, you know, you go absolutely nuts, and just
but
wait.
It doesn't.
Just wait until next season. I'm not telling you yet what it is.
I know. But it doesn't feel. It doesn't feel like it feels like a 90-minute movie.
Okay.
You know, I guess I do joke about the 90 minutes, but I think if anything feels like I didn't look at my watch. I wasn't like, oh, this feels long. There were no parts that felt like we're just adding to it. And I think, and maybe this is coming off of, you know, I haven't watched a lot of like movies recently. This has the right amount of balance between we're going to be an action thriller heist movie, hijack movie, but we're going to throw in a little bit of humor.
Yeah. Well, come on.
Like amount, but
you got Jerry Stiller and you got to have, and Fatcast, you know, you gotta have humor in it.
Well, my favorite part is the ineptitude of the New York City cops, and how one bicycle can ruin their plans, as if they weren't holding everybody back anyway. But I, you know, I'm sure you've discussed it at length. Yes. But it just, you know, that was, as someone who had never seen the movie, that was almost like a cathartic laugh during a high stakes.
Yeah, but I'm
moment.
Sure you knew that was coming.
I
you
didn't.
Thought that they were going to make it there in time, and that would be it.
I didn't know they were going to make it there in time. In fact, before the crash, I did not think they were going to make it in time. But I didn't think it was going to be because they were going to crash the car.
Flip it over there.
That was like Blues Brothers hasn't happened yet. But like, we're talking full Blues Brothers style. Like, we're going to turn the car upside down. Yeah, that's also. There's a reason we can't make these movies anymore. Like, and Blues Brothers would be a part of that, and Smokey and the Bandit would be part of that, where those cop cars that we ruined in all of those movies, you know, I think there's a better center of gravity in all the cop cars now to kind of ruin some of those chase scenes and wreck for us.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Bring back the old cars.
Because you have to have the, you know, the way when you flip the car, the police car over, so then the you know, the lights come off.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, and it needs to be able to move for like at least 50 feet on its.
Yeah, of course.
You know. Yeah.
All right. Well, I am so happy to hear that you enjoyed seeing this, and that I was able to recommend something you know, you didn't say, "Oh my God, I had to watch this movie for you," and that's it. Like the last one that you had to watch. Yeah.
Well, you know, they can't all be winners, Rob.
Okay, but that's because, you know, they had that extra appendix to the Die Hard series. What can they tell you? Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
At least we had fun talking about that one.
We did, and look. We have the credits for this one, and I think we're going to have a blast.
Oh, for sure. Because there's so much to talk about in the credits.
Can I
let you read it. Hold on 1 second. So
okay.
Minute 104 begins with the Transit Authority disclaimer and ends with the apprentice editor credit. Which I love that credit. He's the apprentice editor. You know, is he playing around with brooms when
that mops brooms?
Right. Yeah, that's right, mops. Yep. That's right. Is he playing around with mops before you know, while the editor's away? Yeah, just clean up here before I'll be back in an hour.
First, before I read this, okay, you've watched a lot more movies than I
have. Oh, come on. I don't watch movies at all.
Have you ever seen remotely close to what I'm about to read in the credits of anything before?
I have not. But in my defense, I gotta say, in most movies, I don't sit through the credits.
Okay.
But I've never heard of this type of thing in a credit. Let's put it this way: when I've sit in the theater and watching a Marvel movie credits, you know, in order to see that extra scene at the end, they don't have things like this.
They don't. All right, here we go. This is, I didn't even know this was in my minute, and I paused the movie to read this because I didn't think I read it right.
And
the
I also
first
don't
time.
Think that you need to pause it because it's on the screen for so freaking long. But that's a separate issue.
I was dumbfounded, Rob. I was dumbfounded.
Yeah, yesterday, we touched upon it a little bit because it was there for a few seconds on the yesterday's episode, but have it your way. Go ahead.
Okay. Although many of the scenes in this film were taken on transit property, the New York City Transit Authority is not responsible for the plot, story, and characters portrayed. The authority did not render technical advice and assistance.
It's funny they say and as opposed to or,
okay.
But whatever. That's fine.
So the first part, completely understandable. But why was it important for them to say that the authority did not render technical advice and assistance. This is the part that I'm confused by. Obviously, they needed permission to shoot within the subway, and to, you know, use a subway car. Was the transit authority like, all right, but you can't tell people that they can get around the dead man switch, or that they can just hide? Like, are they afraid that if they had rendered technical advice, people would be like, oh, this is exactly how you hijack a subway in New York City? Is that what we're afraid of?
It sounds like it. It definitely sounds like it. It's a very, very strange. It's let's put it this way. It is definitely legalese. Okay, they're doing it from perspective of saying, okay, where we don't come to us. You know, now we didn't deal with this when we talked about the dead man switch and all that stuff. You know, does the contraption that they made work? My assumption is no.
Okay. Well, they show so
no,
little
I'm
of
saying,
it.
In real life, there is no such thing. There is a dead man switch. We discussed that, and we discussed also the fact that in New York, the dead man switch was used 3 times in history. You know, where someone had a heart attack or whatever the problem was.
But they show so little of whatever that device is that even if I gave you that briefcase with those tools. Just looking at the movie, you would not be able to replicate whatever.
No, you
got
to find Mr. Green to do it.
And he ain't talking.
Mr. Green's the only one who's still talking.
Well, we'll see. No.
He's laughing it up in the joint.
He's got to be out on parole if he's alive by now.
Yeah, okay. That is definitely a very good point.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe they really wanted to make an example out of the one guy they got, you know. But yeah, I think this is funny. And the reason I think this is funny is because maybe this is 1974, right? So is this before the stock movie credit of any... Whatever the language is now that they put at the end of every movie.
I don't believe so.
Yeah, so it's before that.
It's not before that. I think they've had that for a long time.
Okay, so that I don't. Yeah, I wasn't sure, I read the words and they didn't register. This is why I paused it, because they registered and I was like, I'm really confused. What did I just read? I don't know. All I know is that they are clearly very protective. Although I will say that might be the most spacious command center I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, you could easily fit like 18 more desks in there without people being on top of each other. They had a lot of room. There must be a cushy.
Apparently,
guy.
Frank, you know, likes to have room around there.
That was the one. Everything. The rest of the credits are just. I looked for something. There's not much else.
we do get this for quite a long time on screen. You know, it's there for almost 10 seconds. Yeah. And then we start getting a list of, the second unit director and the assistant director and the script supervisor. The one thing that really jumped out at me is they have the production aides, and it's not justified the way that.
Yeah, I noticed that because I went, wait a minute. What
the hell? There's 6 people listed there, but it's. You know, someone forgot to, justify the margins. And they didn't if it was centered, I would say, okay, that's fine. But it's not centered. It was long before they had Word. So I can.
Well, let's just put it this way. I think that if you look at the rest of the credits, nobody takes credit for the credits. I don't think there's a credit for the credit scroll in this film. So, either they left themselves out, or they were like, ah, we'll just get one of those editing aids to do it.
Exactly. The production aids, I mean.
Well, the editing, the editing.
You're talking about the apprentice editor.
The apprentice, right. Yeah.
Yeah, then we get, the rest of the credits, center decorator, camera operator, assistant cameraman, second unit cameraman, gaffer, grips, property master, set dresser, scenic artist. I've this is my 11th movie doing it this way, it seems as if the credits move along a little slower than usual, meaning that, like, they're trying to drag out the time a little bit. I don't know why. You know, I know that you're not a fan of that type of thing, so I don't really know.
Well, you know, this is one of it's been a while since I've seen credits like this, though, right? Because there's no credit scroll here.
No.
So maybe it's also a thing where it's like, I don't know. Maybe they just thought people would need more time to read as opposed to a scroll where it's on for however many seconds. But there's also, I will say this, I know that there's an amount of the cast that's still up front in the front credits. For as long as this is on screen and as few quote unquote slides as there are, as screens as there are, it feels like this was done with very few people. Like, this feels like I don't know why, and I obviously don't have any, like, true comparisons. I haven't seen credits for other movies from 74 recently. But it felt like this was, like, I don't know, 50 people that made this movie. Minus the cast and the extras. But it felt like there's, like, all right, well, we only needed 50 people to make this movie, and the rest is fine.
My assumption is there are a little more than 50 people that are on. I have not counted everybody, but
I'm ballparking. It just feels like a small amount. It feels like there should be more. I will say I'm very happy though that there is a sound recordist and a sound re-recording, because sound re-recording is not a phrase I think I've ever really saw as a title.
I've seen that one before, actually.
Okay. Well, I'd like to re-record things, maybe. I think I could do that.
Well, we've recorded it, and now we're going to re-record it.
They didn't really have a sound engineer.
If you look at the names, the sound recordist, his name is David Moschlack, right? And you also see there that there's too much of a gap between his first and last name. So, you know, someone didn't do that one properly either. And then in the sound re-recording, between the words sound and re, also the space is a little too, too wide.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for the credits on this that are not good.
Exactly. But whatever. You know, we at least we got the disclaimer beforehand. You know, then.
Yeah.
Right. Then we get the Teamster and the wardrobes and makeup, and then we get the stunt coordinators. I love how they have someone dealing with the motorcycle stunts, because, you know, we did have motorcycle stunts here also. And then you get the assistant editor and the sound editors and the music editor and the assistant sound editor, and the final one that you get on today's minute is the apprentice editor.
If I ever get into something bigger, I'm gonna ask, like, if they're like, what title do you want? I'd be like, can I be the apprentice editor? I want to bring that back. Let's bring back that sounds like a fun thing to be.
Okay. I mean, Jay Dranch has a lot of credits on IMDb. He's both a sound editor and he's in the sound department and the editorial department. in different. And he mostly he started off in the editorial department. This was actually his very first movie, which again is the reason why he's The Apprentice. And then he also he has 7 credits on IMDb in the editorial department and 39 in the sound department. And he pretty much stopped working in 1999. So, you know, I don't know what he's doing now. He's just not. He's not on IMDb.
Well, it's a pretty good career from 74 to 99, yes. Though. That's
yeah.
Especially making movies.
That is true. That's very true.
Yeah.
And that's all I have to say about what we see on the screen here.
Yeah. That's not much more. That's it.
Exactly.
That's it. The only thing I would say is the fact that they call out motorcycle stunts means that the other stunt coordinator was responsible for the car stuff and the action sequences with the hostages in the runaway in the car.
Someone you know falling off or jumping off of the train when you get the hippie jumping off the train.
Yeah. Yeah, would we call that a jump or a fall?
It was a really well. He injured himself in the jump. So there you go. Yeah, so a little
short. It was an attempted jump.
That it was. Okay, here I'm gonna ask you a question that I've asked every one of my other guests so far.
Okay.
So I mean, now that we're done talking about this particular minute, so do you think that, and because you've only seen this one time, you know, you know it'll be your gut reaction to this whole thing. Do you think that Mr. Blue is the one who set this whole thing up, or is there someone higher up that put these guys together to it? Like I keep bringing up the example, like Reservoir Dogs. Okay, you have a Joe or you have a Mercedes Wallace, who set up the whole thing, and you know they put these 4 guys together and said, okay, this is what you're gonna do. When you're done, you're going to split the money up 4 ways. We're going to go and meet in this particular place. You'll give me all the money. Each of you get your cut, you know, that type of thing. What do you think?
No, I think it felt like that was his show to run.
Okay. And why would he take on someone like Mr. Gray if that was the case?
Well, if you're going to do it, you need a team, obviously. You don't have a lot of, I mean, look, it's kind of like I look at it kind of like any other sports team, right? Like you got to fill the roster. You need to fill the spots. And unless you're going to wait a year or two for the right guys to come along. I mean, by the same token that he could have gotten somebody that wasn't that much of a loose cannon, he could have waited a week so that somebody didn't have a cold. You know, I mean, there are, you know, if it's time to go, it's time to go. And I got to fill the roster. And if that's who is available, that's who's available. And I guess the other part of it is, what's really available to him? He's basically a free agent. He's got a guy who's an ex-mafia, but he's not mafia connected, which to me means, you know, for just reading into 1970s New York, he doesn't get to pick the best and the brightest of everything. Otherwise it would have been a mob job.
Okay. There is something to that.
But it didn't feel like this felt more like I mean, I don't want to make this necessarily, although it's not a bad way to think of it. I look at him as Hans Gruber, where there might be other things involved, but this particular thing, he's running the show.
Okay. All right. Again, there's no way of us knowing either way. I tend to lean towards the fact that there is someone higher up, because I can't imagine Mr. Blue agreeing to take Mr. Gray with him.
Yeah, I think it's any port in a storm. Like, we're either going to do this or we're not. Like, we need
but
a body.
You know, you want it to be successful. This is, I mean, I know the analogy you brought up with the sports team is a good analogy, except for the fact that, okay, you lose the game, you lose the game. You don't lose your life. That's you know,
true.
this is a life and death situation, or potentially life and death situation. And, you know, again, you lose the game, you don't go to jail.
Also, I would argue, given his, I mean, he understates his work in South Africa so much that I feel like he probably thought he could handle him anyway. It just feels like there's also an ego trip to it. Like, I've got this really good plan, and if I need a guy that I only kind of think can, you know, can you physically do the job? Yes. All right, I could probably handle the rest, because there is a massive ego to him. And there might be some of that as well. Like, all right, it's not exactly who I would want, but I could probably handle this. And more or less, he does handle him. I know he talks back, but for the most part, he does what, until the very end, he does what he's told.
Right.
He gets a little out of line, but he does what he's told. So, I mean, that ego is probably deserved. You know, and I think, I mean, now that I said it, like,
yes, you're not.
I think the Gruber comparisons
are really
good,
and
because
I
both
agree with that comparison.
Yeah, it's that cool cat nature, I guess. That just like, all right,
exactly.
Also, the delivery is the
Again,
same.
That's what was brought up.
Yeah,
very interesting. All right, great.
All right, yeah. Well, I mean, if you want, I'll start working on a script treatment for the prequel that has somebody higher up putting them all together, that ends with them
like
getting
do,
on the subway ahead. Platform.
I would love to read.
Hey, look, we're in an age of franchises and legacy sequels, baby.
True.
Like, let's go.
That's very true. All right, so now let's go through all five of the daily segments. That's right.
Homework.
So we'll start with
homework.
We'll go in order. We'll go with Math Out Monday. So why don't you give me your top five Walter Matthau performances?
Okay.
If you have five.
So, uh-huh.
I know my
Yeah, question. So I do have five. Not a lot to choose from. I will say number five was Dennis the Menace. And really, it's not like my favorite of him, but I wanted to include it because I'm pretty sure that was my first Matthau introduction. My second one is The Odd Couple, with an asterisk that says Grumpy Old Men, because it feels like the same movie. And I had to go back and watch The Odd Couple. But I really like him in The Odd Couple. Three, Bad News Bears. Remaking Matthau movies? Is that? number two is a movie I completely forgot I had watched, but like when I was going through the list, I was like, I remember that. IQ. Walter Matthau as Einstein is like the smallest part. It's not the smallest part. It's a small part of this rom-com, but I think Matthau makes a great Einstein. And then I put this movie, Taking a Pelham 1-2-3, at the top, because I really enjoyed it. Now, it could be recency bias. I'll admit it's been a long time since I've seen any of the others mentioned, but I thought it was really good.
All right, very cool. That is a great list. Thank you very much. Let's move on to the next one. Blues Day Tuesday. Your top five Robert Shaw performances.
All right. So I will admit that a lot of these I have not seen in a very long time. I will say, in looking at the list of Robert Shaw's IMDb, there is a movie I now have to watch because I want to see him as the Sheriff of Nottingham. I didn't know he played that, and now I need to see that. So that goes on my to watch list. But he's great in The Sting. I know it's small. I think it's small, but like he's really good in From Russia.
Wait,
with
are
Love.
These are these still honorable mentions, or are these so?
No. These are the things. Yeah. The Sting is 5. Yeah. From Russia with Love is 4. Number 3 is a movie I watched within the last few years, which has an amazing cast, and it's Battle of Britain, which, my God, that particular movie, that might be the best, like, film representation of the Battle of Britain I've seen. I really like that thing. Number 2, I will, the Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 would be number 2, because I feel like, and I don't know how everybody else did this, I feel like Jaws has got to be number 1 for most people, myself included. It just feels that way. Especially when you say performances, once they're out on the boat, Robert Shaw owns that movie. So yeah, that's my 5. Although we'll see how long it takes me to watch Robin and Marian, because maybe him as the Sheriff of Nottingham will preempt some of those other things, but I don't know.
Anything's possible.
Anything is possible.
All right. Excellent. Let's move on to Wednesday segment, Hijack Hump Day. Movies about hijackings.
I have a questionable one at 5, and if you don't accept it, I have a backup.
Okay. I don't know why something is considered questionable, but go ahead.
Phone Booth.
If you want to count that as a hostage situation,
he hijacks a phone booth.
Exactly.
I don't remember the character's name, but it's Kiefer Sutherland is the bad
guy.
Well,
you know the trivia in that movie is that Kiefer Sutherland wasn't the original voice that they used there, and they filmed the whole thing with someone else's voice, and they brought him in afterwards to change it.
I did not know that.
The same thing with what's that movie, Her? They also changed the voice. Originally it was Janine Garofalo, and they changed it to Scarlett Johansson.
Oh wow, okay. Yeah, I like the idea that they hijacked a phone booth in Phone Booth. I like that. That was my 5.
Right. You see, now I have to see who the original voice was for Phone Booth. Wow.
I can't imagine it without Kiefer. Like, maybe because I've only watched it, I didn't know. I guess. Well, that's just how it works.
Yeah. I don't see it right away when I'm looking on IMDb. So maybe we'll come back to it.
Okay. So yeah, Phone Booth, my number 5. My number 4 is Air Force One.
I don't know. It was originally Ron Eldard. There you go.
Okay.
You know who that is?
All right. No, but the name sounds
familiar.
He was
on ER.
Why? Okay.
And then he was also, where was he? He was in Deep Impact. He's been in a lot of movies. I like him.
Yep. This was the height of Kiefer on 24, though. I think, if I'm right in my time period.
It's the year after it came out, I believe. I believe 24 came out in 2001, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
Maybe it was 2004.
No, it would have had to have at least been
2002. It was 2001. There you go.
Okay. So yeah, yeah, he was making his big comeback as a big A-lister. So, back when TV was not, that was the turnaround point, right? When TV started to become like not a thing.
Exactly.
Like, oh, you can't do movies anymore. You're doing just TV. So yeah, so Phone Booth 5, Air Force 1 4. Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3 would be 3. And then I really had some trouble figuring out my 1 and 2. I knew what the top two were going to be. Which it is a question mark. I ended up going with Speed at number 2 and Con Air at number 1. Truth be told, Con Air and Speed were the first two I thought of. Outside of the context of watching Pelham 1, 2, 3. They were just the first that came. So it was like, all right, like let's do that.
Okay.
Also, I was confused that on the list, you know, to peel back the curtain, occasionally Rob is nice enough to send us all lists so we can kind of see like what's there. And Speed wasn't included. Speed 2 was included. Nobody liked they didn't like and I did my own like searching. When you look up Hijack, people specifically want to talk about boats and planes. Right. And they really don't like talking about any other vehicle.
I wonder why.
It's not a boat. Yeah, it's very odd. There, it's almost as if very few people try and hijack things that aren't boats and planes.
Apparently not in movies. No, unless you're Mr. Boo, then you go with the train.
Yeah. So yeah, there's the hijacks, the hijackings.
All right. Excellent. And now we're going to start testing your trivia. Ooh.
Oh,
your
boy.
Trivia knowledge. I know you love these.
Let's see how dumb I can sound.
Oh, come on.
No,
you,
it's fine.
You know how to sound really dumb. So that's good.
Yeah, I can sound dumb with the best of them.
Exactly. Don't sell yourself short. Exactly. All right. So because I'm doing this randomly, so I will not know. You know, I didn't choose something for you. Just
okay.
You know, we'll see from the list. I'm going to give you 5 movie-related trivia questions from the 1970s, and we're going to see how well you do.
Okay. Okay.
All right. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get. Around and around and around the wheel.
All right. I'm calling it right now. I'm going to if I get 2, I'll be happy.
Okay.
That's why I'm you know. Okay.
Okay. All right. Which U.S. president was reportedly obsessed with the movie Patton and watched it multiple times, even in the Oval Office?
Oh, man. Like, my gut instinct is to say Nixon. I don't know why, but I want to say Nixon.
And you would be right.
Wow. All right.
You see, you have to have a little more faith in yourself.
Well, we're only 1 for 1. It's fine.
No, still. you're saying the other two are going to be hard. The other 4 are not going to be as easy. All right, well, let's spin the wheel and see what we get.
Okay.
Round and round the wheel goes for your second one. All right. In the 1970 movie Kelly's Heroes, what was the name of the character played by Don Rickles?
Oh, I have no idea. You know, so, okay, I'm just, I have no idea. 1, I have no idea. 2, I own the DVD, and I still haven't watched it. And I've been meaning to for years. So maybe getting called out now by not knowing the character name is reason enough to be like, all right, I'm watching it within the next week.
Okay, that's fair.
It has an amazing cast, which is why I picked it up, and then I just never watched it.
Well, you gotta change that. It's let's put it this way. If I were to be doing like 100 movies eventually, it's on my list. It's just not, it's not high enough that it's going to come up probably in our lifetimes.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Yeah. All right. So what is his name?
The answer is Crapshoot.
Okay.
Yes. His name is Crapshoot.
Hit me with number three. Let's go. Let's maybe some redemption.
All right. Let's go with your third question. So let's spin the wheel and see what we got. Okay, this one you have a chance.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, before directing Harrison Ford in Star Wars, George Lucas directed him in what movie?
American Graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
That's right.
All right, so that's my two. I'm two for three. If I go one for two, I exceed expectations.
There you go. All right, let's spin the wheel for number four. Around and around and around it goes. How many airport movies were made in the 1970s?
Oh boy. Well, I know Airport 77 couldn't have been the first. But they weren't making a lot of movies. Like, it wasn't like hundreds of movies were coming out either.
I regret that it's not 100.
Yeah. I'm going to go with 17.
In the 1970s?
Couple of years.
Just in the decade of the 70s, how many movies came out in the franchise Airport?
Oh, just the franchise Airport?
Yeah. What did you think?
Oh, I thought you meant airport movies, like movies revolving around airports.
No.
I wasn't thinking from franchise. No, then it's got to be what, like three? Three.
Four. Gotta four, be three. You were close.
Four? Yes. They made four of those?
They made four of them in the 1970s. You have Airport, which came out in 1970, Airport 75, which came out in 74, Airport 77, which came out in 77, and Airport 79, the Concorde, which came out in 79.
Wow.
Yep.
And people complain about, look, I'm going to go on a little tangent, right? So I picked up, because I had a collection of old heavy metal magazines, and I started picking them up to read them. And there's an editorial from 1979. No, 80. 80? I think it's 80. There's an editorial from 1980 that spans up two pages bemoaning sequels and remakes. And it is the most hilarious thing to read. From the hindsight of 40 years on.
Yeah, seriously.
Because somebody was complaining about it in 1980.
And so nobody was listening.
For anybody out there who's complaining about legacy sequels and franchises, this is something that's been complaining, people have been complaining about for 40 years. So just throwing that out.
All right, that makes a lot of sense. Definitely makes a lot of sense. All right, are you ready for your final one to see if you're able to break your record of what you thought it's going to be?
Yes, let's go.
All right, for your final question, let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Around and around and around and around it goes. All right. in the 1976 movie All the President's Men, who played Bob Woodward?
Was it? I mean, I have a 50-50 shot, right? So was that Redford? Was that Redford?
Yes.
Okay. What's funny is that All the President's Men is on my the book is on my to read list, coming up, at least as we record. So maybe by the time I'm on again, I'll have read it.
Well, you got about 6 months, so.
Yeah, I got some time.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of time.
All right. Well, that puts Thursday to bed, and I went 3 for 5. So that's I'm happy.
Yeah, so Dustin Hoffman played Carl Bernstein, and Redford played Woodward. There you go. And Martin Balsam was also in the movie.
Okay.
All right. So now we will move on to the Friday segment of Fun City Friday. So now you get to tell me your top five favorite or best movies featuring New York City.
So I number five is a four-way tie for one reason, and that is because I like these as New York City movies for the same reason. Fritz the Cat, Heavy Traffic, Coonskin, and Hey Good Lookin' are all Ralph Bakshi films set in New York City, and they all contain some of the best watercolor backgrounds of New York City that you will see. He didn't use the same artist for all the films, but he did make sure that great detail was put into the backgrounds that set up the New York City sections of all of these films. And I think, you know, the other side of this is that, you know, when Fritz the Cat is maybe a little more asterisk because it's a cross country type thing, but the beginning of it, as well as Heavy Traffic, Coonskin, and Hey Good Lookin', are all New York City films. And I that's the, they're just kind of like the Bakshi universe that's set in New York City, is my number five.
Okay. All right. So that isn't cheating. It's fine.
I might have to pick the weakest of all of them if I had to choose one, because I think that I prefer some of the New York City backgrounds in Fritz the Cat, but they're all really good. Now we're straight on from here on out.
Does this mean I have to continue with my weekly messages to you to about your Bakshi reminder? Now that you've reminded me that I stopped doing that?
No. But I will take some more shots. Let's put it that way.
Please, I think you should. You've got nothing to lose.
I do have nothing to lose. So number four, Wall Street. Which I haven't watched in a long time. I used to watch that on a pretty, not annual basis, but a pretty regular basis. I really like that. Since I brought it up earlier, I don't mind the legacy sequel of whatever Wall Street 2, whatever the subtitle of it was. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. It wasn't bad.
Right.
Just whatever. Number three. Oh man. Probably could have chosen any number of these things, but I went with Annie Hall. I don't know. I know there's people that, cannot necessarily separate the artist from the art, and that's not necessarily a discussion we need to get into now. Really. But I think Annie Hall only works because it is a New York. I don't know that you could do that. I don't know that that kind of humor, it's he's a New York Jew, right? You know, like I don't know that that stuff works if it's set in Chicago or even LA,
right?
Or
right. But I gotta say, my favorite joke or / scene in the movie actually takes place in California when they're passing the cocaine and
passing the cocaine. let's not forget that I forever Even though in The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, he is the mayor's assistant or whatever his official title is, he will forever be the guy who tried to get Woody Allen high.
He's the deputy mayor.
Yeah, he is, to me, I'm like, that's the guy who tried to get, what, Mellish is his name in those movies or whatever?
I don't remember his name in any of
them. I don't either, but he's the guy who tried to get Woody Allen high. Because it was his party. If I remember correctly.
If I remember correctly, I think you're right. But he wasn't the one who was passing
wasn't. Although, that is the funniest scene, but my favorite scene is literally a few seconds before that, which is Goldblum on the phone saying, like, "What? I forgot my mantra." Just 30 seconds. It's the only time he's in the film. Anyway, I digress. Number two. Godzilla, 1998. I know a lot of people don't like that movie, and that's fine, but that movie is Godzilla Comes to Manhattan, and I don't know. They literally siphon, they block all the bridges to try and keep the, you know, before they realize he can swim, to keep the monster on the island. And that doesn't happen anywhere
else. Right. You see, my problem with that movie is Matthew Broderick. He's not the guy that I would put in to try to stop Godzilla.
That's fair. I also
love Matthew Broderick. Don't take that the wrong way, but not in that.
Yeah, he's two producers.
Exactly.
Which I almost included on the list, but I didn't. So yeah, I also think that that movie gets a lot of flack because it's a Godzilla movie.
Right.
I think if that movie had been Monster Takes Manhattan, as an example, and not within the Godzilla franchise, it probably would have done better ish. Maybe.
I don't know about that. I don't know if I can agree with that.
Okay. But anyway, that's number two, and number one. For me, set in New York City, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's where it is for me. I couldn't go any higher. That was the first one that came to mind, if I'm being honest. So, yeah.
All right, that is fair.
There's the list.
All right, that is great. All right. So now we will play the daily game of Name That Remake.
Okay.
Where I will randomly choose a remake and give you a brief synopsis, and you have to try to tell me what movie it is.
Okay.
And you can you know, feel a little better about it that there aren't that many left on the list. So...
All right.
And it's possible that you're going to get this movie. Who knows? I don't know how I will describe it to you if I get it, but I haven't thought that far ahead yet.
Okay.
All right. Maybe I'll just take it off the list. All right. It didn't happen. That's good.
Okay. As you're going through, right, as you're preparing, I just keep thinking, like, oh, man, but, like, if I had described the remake of The Italian Job, I don't know that it would come off as sounding like the original because it's different. And that's now my, oh, God, there's no guarantee it's a true remake.
Okay, so the original movie came out in 1955. And the remake came out in 2004, and it's about a group of five men that plan a bank robbery and pretend to be classical musicians.
What? Pretend to be classical musicians? I had until you said musicians, I had one in mind. Although I don't know, because I was thinking Ocean's 11.
No.
But they didn't pretend to be...
Right, I will read you the IMDb synopsis on the movie from 1955. Five oddball criminals planning a bank robbery rent rooms on a cul-de-sac from an octogenarian widow under the pretext that they are classical musicians.
No, because that's not. I. First of all, there's a movie I'm thinking of that's not it that I can't think the name of, which was remade, which is not helpful to me. I think I'm gonna have to say I don't know.
Well, what is it that you're thinking of? Maybe you're thinking of the.
No, because I'm thinking of something that would have come out more recently. This is the one with, the old guys. The old guys doing the bank heist.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I think we've talked about that already this season. I'm trying to remember what the name of it is.
Style. Something.
Going in style. Going in style.
There you go. There you go. I know that was a remake, but that they aren't. They're just old guys doing a heist. I also don't know when the first one came out, but I think it was past
79.
Okay. Yeah, I got nothing on this.
Okay, the remake was made by the Coen brothers, and it starred Tom Hanks.
Is this the Lady Killers?
Yes, it is. Very good.
That was a remake?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes, the original one was with Alec Guinness.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Excellent. Is there anything else that you want to discuss about this particular movie or anything?
Well, I mean, now that we're at the tail end of it, I can ask you, Rob, how's it feel to have basically completed 1,200 episodes?
It's really interesting because I don't think of it. You know, from a numerical perspective, you know, for me, it's basically completing, you know, 11 movies. That's what it comes down to.
Okay. I understand
the
that.
Number of episodes is just mind blowing from that perspective, you know, especially knowing, and this will be the slight spoiler that I will give people who are not in the know yet. You know, my next season, 136 episodes. So, you know, I'm going to be passing the 1300 mark in the next season.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, it's basically most seasons I'm passing one, if not two. I've had seasons where I think Saving Private Ryan I had you know, two milestones in the middle. So it happens. But again, it doesn't make me feel as if I need to stop, and it also doesn't make me, you know, it just surprises me every time I think of it.
Well, I mean, you do have the benefit of, and not a lot of podcasts, depending on how they're done, don't have this kind of ability, but you almost get a clean slate every, well, let's say every 150 episodes, depending on, you know, how long the movie is, yeah. But, or, you know, what you do, but you get a clean slate by the time you're truly sick of, you know, the taking of Pelham 1-2-3, you move on to the next thing, right? So it is a milestone and congratulations, but I also understand where you're coming from, where it's like, yeah, but now I'm done with that movie and I can move on to the next.
Yeah, but it's I haven't reached any point where I was sick of a movie. You know, my part of my problem is, again, just a little peek behind the curtain, because I start pre-production on the next season at the same time that I'm still doing one season. So, you know, I have the excitement of starting the new season. And then at that point, you know, I want to just get to the point where I'm only doing that season. So I can focus all of my efforts on that season as opposed to juggling my efforts, which, again, I don't mind juggling the efforts.
And you've done it, you know, you've juggled enough that you know what that's like.
Of course.
You've
of course.
So it's not, right. You know, and if I may be so bold as to ask, And I do have an idea of what next season is, but ignoring next season for a moment, you already kind of said like, oh, well, if I did this for 100 movies, there are movies like you already know, you have an idea what the next 10 seasons are, right?
I have an idea of what the possibilities are, but I wait until usually the midway point of a season before I make the final decision.
Okay.
You know, like for instance, again, just to peek behind the curtain, the decision for what I'm going to do on season 11 is something that has been nagging me in the back of my brain for 3 seasons, you know, based okay. on an interview that I did or an episode that I did during one of my previous seasons. And I was like, wow, you know, I wish I could do this. And I was like, nah, I don't think so, and whatever. And then it just kept bothering me. And I said, this is the best time to do it. So, you know, and then I started trying to think about how to plan it out. And then once I was able to map it out and plan it out, you know, in my head of how I will do it, how will I be able to accomplish, you know, doing this. And also there's the challenge is always fun also. And, you know, this coming season will is a big challenge. So, yeah.
Well, I'm excited for the next 12.
I can't tell you what's going to be 12 because I don't know yet. That's the thing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, still, I'm still excited for the next 1,200 because that's just what 11 more movies. You know, it's nothing. You know, that's
right. No, it's actually 10 more movies, but yeah. Because, you know, because we you know, it depends on how many, if I continue doing them as minutes or, you know, if I do them in chunks of 5 minutes or whatever it is. You know,
that's true. If we did, if you go back to the Die Hard of it, the especially doing 5 minute segments for 2 movies, right. That, you know, could be more, but it could be less.
Right.
Never
but
know.
I tend to not prefer the 5 minute look at it, but you know, again, spoiler for since you already know, next season will be 5 minutes, but that's just because of the vast amount of minutes that yeah. You know, I don't want to spend 2 years doing one season.
Well, I look forward to coming back. I look forward to whatever games can make me look stupid next season.
Yeah, you did fine. Hey, you passed the 50% mark, so you're good there.
There we go. Pass fail. I passed this time.
Exactly.
But no, seriously, congratulations. I'm happy for you. This is wonderful, and it'll be good to keep you going.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. All right. So would you like to one more time at the end of the season tell people where they can find Agent Palmer?
Yeah, you can find me at agentpalmer.com, which as of this recording, there is a podcast tab. So you can get the podcast and the blog all on one place. And there are now transcripts for each of the episodes on agentpalmer.com or wherever you're listening to this, you can look up the Palmer Files and hear me talk to guests and strangers and friends and family alike in just, you know, it's a cup of coffee with someone. And if you do check out agentpalmer.com for the writing, you know, movie reviews, book reviews, whatever strikes my fancy to write about. That's where you'll find me.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Route Minute. You can find me on my website, movieroutminute.com. You can send me an email at movieroutminute@movieroute.net. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Instagram. So I will be back tomorrow for the finale of yet another season. And until tomorrow, achoo!
God bless you. Gesundheit.